Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Welcome to BWI Live. I'm Thomas Frank Carr, Sean Fitznay Bauer with me today. We're talking about Penn State football. Maybe not future as much, although we might get to that in a little bit on the mailbag. But we're talking past, present, and future Nittany Lions. It's a big week for not football. Athletic testing coming up for the Nittany Lions at the NFL Combine. 10 of them trying to secure their future spot in the NFL Draft. And Penn State Max Testing Day on the way for us to go view later this week. But spring football with max testing week here is just around the corner, literally days away at this point. So we are previewing the Penn State offense. We're power ranking all five positions ahead of spring football. And I know, the panel is super excited to give their thoughts on that today. Fitz, how are you doing this morning?
Oh, we love a good power ranking around here. So yeah. it might be a weekly thing we start doing is just power ranking stuff, power ranking. Nate, you can power rank the food at the BJC. I know chicken finger baskets are high on your list. We can do anything. Like the possibilities are endless.
Come on.
Here. What?
That's not right.
I mean,
we had a good series going on Fridays, our Friday five. So we might bring that back. Just do it on Tuesdays. The Tuesday five doesn't have the same ring to it, but you know, we can always make that work. And of course it's Tuesday. So the mailbag coming up at the end of the show, if you got questions, throw them in the chat and we'll get to those at the end of the show. Nate, what's going on with you this week? What are you thinking about in terms of Penn State football before spring break hits next week?
You know, I think I made this joke before, but I'm going to make it again. This is my annual pilgrimage into a weight room where I try to figure out what four plates on each side, plus the collar, what the weight is on the bar as Penn State's actual athletes conduct what I assume is healthy for them to lift all those weights.
Are you counting the blocking collar as a weight?
Isn't that 5 pounds? No. All these years.
You just need the 45s plus the bar plus whatever else is on the bar. Yeah. So the bar is usually 45 pounds.
Okay. Sure.
Just call Dave.
I deal in grams, sir.
Okay. All right.
Very metric.
So we're off to a hot start on max testing week. So, and on the show today, by the way, so hopefully everyone is here that wants to be here. You know, we got a message on the streaming platform to start the morning that there was an issue, getting the show on YouTube. So hopefully you can see us. I know there's people here. We have people in the chat. There's people watching us live. So if you saw the tweet with the special link, send it to your friends that, you know, like and watch the show. But we also got off to a hot start for, you know, getting interesting looks into Penn State football. Tony Rojas posted this morning. This, speaking of, let me mute the audio there. Speaking of talking about max testing, here he is doing his power clean. And guys, I just want to get your reaction to, I think this is 350 on the bar is what he says. So, Nate, I'll say, I know you're an expert on these things, so I'll give you the first crack at Tony Rojas doing his power clean.
Looks great. Great form. Look at that. I mean, it looked like he almost toppled over there, but sure. No, he's getting, look, he's doing all the stuff, right? Like this is the progression. Is you got a first year and that's kind of a baptism by fire, but obviously had so many traits that translated immediately to on-field production. But then when you compare that and marry that with an off-season, like a full throated off-season of work in this arena, yeah, that's where the dividends come.
Fitz, you got any thoughts for us?
Yeah, Tony is the guy that's drawing some buzz this winter. I'm fascinated to see what the plan is for him, because they've talked about Sam, but also in that Tom Allen defense that they're shifting to, that 4-2-5, you know, the Sam is, I don't want to say a bit player, but like it's either three safeties, three linebackers, and the third linebacker usually gets cut. So very curious to see how they deploy him, and if that just means he's going to be moved to Will with Abdul moving over. And you know, going back to the Abdul thing, that was something that's been in the works. I think Nate mentioned that right after the bowl game. So like, it's not a situation where that was just sprung on him and now they're all of a sudden they're scrambling. This is all a plan. It's just a matter of, hey, they like to keep some things under in-house. But I'm fascinated to see what Rojas can do. This is a guy that they think has tremendous potential. He showed some really good things in sort of cleanup time last year, no pun intended. He's got some potential. Excited to see what he can do.
Yeah, I think it's going to be fascinating to watch. And I put up Saquon Barkley here just so you can see a comparison of the last time we saw. It's not the same. So this is 405 for Saquon Barkley. But as far as the performance here, it's the same drill that Saquon Barkley went viral for however many years ago. So I texted my wife, who is a personal trainer, and she's got her strength coaching thing. She's a professional. She's the expert on this. And she said, that's pretty bleeping good. So Tony Rojas gets a seal of approval from the official seal of approval giver. I love watching what he does there in terms of how it relates to the field, because if you notice, his butt is basically on the ground.
The depth is ridiculous there. Just absolutely. Like, I popped another hernia watching it. It's just... I used that on Twitter last week, so I apologize for reusing old material. That's what I do. But no, his depth is incredible, which means his flexibility is incredible, which, you know, does translate
and mobility
what they're looking for. Yeah. To. Yeah.
Yeah. That's one of the things, like, I always love real world examples of like things that I say that are just kind of like word salad to some people in a scouting profile. It's like when we talk about hip mobility and the ability to have range and depth, and getting that low allows you to get into an athletic position and explode in multiple directions. So like, as much as it's cool to just watch him, the real world application of him being able to do that is tangible. So I super impressed, not surprised by Tony Rojas necessarily. Is there anything or anyone you guys are looking forward to this week? We're going to speak with Chuck Losey. Fitz, what are you interested in learning about from Penn State from the winter workout period that we get a chance to talk to Chuck Losey annually at the end of?
Yeah, Penn State's got to rebuild on its hands on the offensive line. I think that is the most important thing that we can look to, and we're going to talk about that with power rankings. But guys like Javen Williams, a new guy like Nolan Rucci, Anthony Duncan, those guys at tackle, they're going to have to be ready to play football, but you're going to see some strides. I think it's interesting to watch or to listen to what they've said about Nolan Rucci since he got here in terms of maybe a little bit undertrained at Wisconsin. At least that's the kind of the vibes that I'm getting, the sort of the undertones there. And, you know, since he got here, he's put on some weight. He seems to be a little bit more flexible, a little bit more mobile, if you will. So I'm curious to see what he looks like in spring practice. And maybe this is a situation where you break him out of that mold, and maybe it finally happens for him. I don't know that I'm put the pads on yet. There's only so much we can speculate about, but a guy like Nolan Rucci, who can still, if he can still make strides a couple of years into the program, a lot of these guys, they get into the program, they start in this ridiculous program that they think they're ready for, but they're not. And then all of a sudden these gains come very quickly. And then you sort of level off as you get over time, just because your natural athletic ability, your natural strength and all that kind of stuff just kind of, I don't want to say plateaus, but like there's only so far that you can go and still play football. But these gains right off the top of transfers of freshmen, it's really, that's the stuff that we watch.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to hear what he has to say from that perspective. Nate, is there something else you're interested in what we're going to learn this week?
Yeah, I think, I mean, typically we get pretty good insight and updates into all the new guys, right? The transfers, one, right? Julian Fleming, how's he look? How's he doing? Kimber Harris. But then you got the true freshman too, right? What's the baptism for those guys? How are those guys, you know, kind of holding up between winter workouts, which have their own lore, right? I mean, it becomes its own thing, right? Yeah. when it has that type of reputation, how, you know, and then the, like Fitz said, those immediate gains, what do those look like? And and how are they acclimating?
We are going to get a chance to learn all of those things. I'm interested in watching more of these. You know, the squats aren't necessarily as informative about performance. It's more strength based, but it's always fun to watch a lot of plates go up and down. I love just the general vibe of being around a lot of testosterone. Like the it is a good time if you're into lifting and lifting culture to go in and check all that stuff out. The reason I was distracted is because I was preparing to talk to you about something that I'm super excited about. And that is, Fitz, I know you've got sons. Were you into card collection as a kid?
Huge into card collection as a kid. And now I've gotten back into, like, on Instagram, it's one of my algorithm things. So it's like that, it's golf, it's dogs, basically. But like the card opening, oh, I love it. It's just, and I mean, I'm not the one buying it, so it's a little bit different, but my kids are now into, I mean, I've got 10 and 7-year-olds. My world kind of revolves around Pokemon. So Pokemon cards, sports cards, my youngest is into baseball. So yes, big card collector. I've got a ton at home that my mom's been trying to pawn off on me for years. I'm trying to keep that there as long as possible. I hope she's not listening. But very, very interested. I was very interested in card collecting. Yes.
So that's a great segue, because if you want to keep them, or maybe you want to sell them, there is now a place to do that in State College where there was not before. Nittany Cards Plus in State College, Center County's only dedicated sports trading card and collectible shop. You can check it out here. You can see it here on the Blue White Illustrated YouTube channel, located at 1631 South Atherton Street, next to the PNC, across from the CVS. It's in State College. It's a huge selection of cards. Graded slabs, sealed hobby boxes, licensed brands from Topps, Bowman, Panini, Upper Deck, and more. It's a full-on card shop, and they obviously feature and specialize the Bowman College series, where you can get Penn State football players. They have some official signed cards. They have some rookie cards. They have NFL cards. Speaking of NFL, if you like the Steelers or the Eagles, which if you live in State College, there's a 50-50 chance you do, they also have a dedicated area that is just Eagles memorabilia, Eagles cards, you can see here on the screen, and Pittsburgh in one of their display cases. So you can get literally all of this stuff, from baseball to football to hockey. They got MMA, all the official cards that you can get. Check them out at Nittany Cards Plus. Search them on Facebook or Instagram, and you can check them out at 1631 South Atherton Street in State College. Give them a call, 814-954-7488. Owned by a guy who's been a part of the State College community for a super long time, in Jason Dombach, somebody who I can personally vouch for as an individual, as a good person, and somebody who is going to take care of you if you check out Nittany Cards Plus. So we're super excited to have them here on the show. We're going to be there live for Blue White Week. We're going to be there on Friday. We still have a TBD on that, so make sure you check back here for more information about us hanging out at Nittany Cards Plus during Blue White Week. So super excited about that.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Let's get into today's topic. And that is, we are power ranking the Penn State offense going into spring football. These guys are going to give you their 5 through 1, starting with number 5.
Number 5.
Nate, you put yours in the chat, so we're going to start with you because I know where to go. Who are you putting at number 5?
Yeah. The receivers can't be anything other than last place until they do something, right? I don't know. These always make me very self-conscious because... What if it's obviously something else. I don't know. When Fitz said a major rebuild on the offensive line, it gave me panic for a moment because I have them higher than five on my list. So I don't know. Clearly there is an internal belief that there is something to work with there collectively, right? There are players in the program that have shown, at least in practice, right, last year and otherwise, that they can do it. It's just a matter of, does it translate to the game and can you stay healthy? That is, to me, the crux of what that position has dealt with for really for the past year. Does a Malik McClain, right, is that buffer year, does he turn into somebody who can do things more consistently? Caden Saunders obviously has been a storyline for years, right? Omari Evans, you name it. I mean, it just, DeAndre, all of those guys, plus now Julian Fleming, how do they sort themselves out? Who provides that consistency and who makes plays, right? Who does the game breaking, right? The splash play. It has been a lacking element, I think, in terms of that consistency for Penn State, and something that you have to have it. You have, if you don't, it really inhibits what your potential is as an offense.
Fitz, are you going somewhere different for number five?
No, I mean, why would I go anywhere different? We haven't seen the wide receivers do what the wide receivers need to do for this team to get where it needs to be. And until then, we just slot them in number five. I mean, I agree with everything Nate said, as energetically as he said it. It's a tough situation because you think that there's talent there. They believe there's talent in like the younger ranks as well. Like we've talked about that 2022 class, which really hasn't done anything to date. Omari's gotten in the field, Caden's gotten in the field, but they think there's talent in there. It's just a matter of milking it, getting the right combinations out there. And so far we haven't seen it. And it's tough to put them anywhere other than five right now. We know Keandre is talented, like raw talent, like that there haven't been many like him, but it's not just talent. It's everything else. So putting them in there with Julian Fleming, who has been, you know, he's gotten good feedback so far as a leader. He's gotten good feedback as a guy that, you know, sets the example, set it on the site last week, not the freak athlete, but like a guy that can be productive. And if it's a guy that can help everybody else out along the way, that's a win for Penn State. It's just a matter of, everybody's got to get on the, I don't want to say the same page, but everyone's got to get where they need to be in terms of matching their talent to their production. I thought Malik McClain was an interesting point that you brought up, because when he was brought on board last year, he was the guy that was going to take a year before he could potentially be what they thought that he could be. Mm-hmm. Comes out and catches the touchdown in what is the first game? It was West Virginia game. He had a touchdown.
Yep. Game breaker, essentially, in the fourth quarter.
Kind of put himself, I don't want to say put himself behind the eight ball, but like kind of adjusted expectations on his own there. And then all of a sudden fell back into the original expectations, and that never goes well. So curious to see where he fits in with everything. I think truly fresh slate, like you got to wipe that board clean, and you may have starters returning, but at the same time, I mean, the way that they finished the year, nobody should be guaranteed a job.
Do you feel, and this is something I've been going back and forth on all offseason, is the balance and the floor of this particular group, I think, is interesting, where 2022, they weren't dynamic. They did not have explosive plays from the receiver position consistently. So still a problem in the offense at that point. But Parker Washington and Mitchell Tinsley were consistent players that would get you third down conversions. And the offense found some explosiveness late in the year through the tight end. So they at least found an avenue for the passing attack to balance the running attack. Does Fleming provide you enough of a floor? I don't want to say just as the one man that can do that, but the combination of him and potentially Trey Wallace, if he's healthy, and Keandre Lambert-Smith, is that a better mix than what they had last season, where they were relying on a lot of those transfers and guys that we talked about that hadn't either been at Penn State very long or hadn't proven anything through their career? Fitz, do you think that's a fair way to look at it, or is it still too unproven?
I think it's still too unproven. Like it's tough to say, because you say the safe floor, and you're going to lump Liam Clifford in there. You're going to lump some of those other guys in there, but it's you got to find those guys because they mean something to your offense. Like first downs mean something to your offense, and so far it's unproven. Trey Wallace, like, I mean, we just keep hearing these great things, and we've seen him in practice. He's there and does some really great things. Can't stay on the game field. Like, and that's tough because it's been injury after injury. And, you know, I know the last one was kind of a repeat of the one that kept him out for a while last year, but like, until he does that, what do you say? Like, hey, he's got potential. Potential is not scoring you points. And that's the issue here.
Okay. So let's go on to our next position in the breakdown. Nate, coming back to you. What is your next position coming in at number four? Oh, wait, hold on.
Number four.
On my own toes there. Now, please.
All right, I'm pulling the pin and I'm jumping on the grenade here.
Do it.
Quarterback.
Okay. So, lay out your reasons why he's coming in. The quarterback position coming in fourth.
Well, I mean, how about this? Not just him, right? The quarterback position, because it's comprehensive. It is figuring out who you want to be. And being that, right? Very clearly, they are invested in Bo Prabula being part of the conversation, right? And you saw that in the second half of last season. What is the plan there, right? So that starts at the top. And then, you know, you have a guy in Drew Aller who it's so easy to just focus on the negative. And so I don't want to do that. He did a lot of very good things. He protected the football. This whole idea of like a game manager is so poo-pooed and dismissed as not important. It is important. It's extremely important. That is a way to win. However, he, again, I use this word pair or marry. Like, he has to be able to marry that, or both, whatever, however you trot them out there. Someone has to be able to make plays. And Penn State didn't have that offensively too often last season. I mean, I pulled the stat at one point, and if I get this wrong, I apologize, but it was something like 10.3 points per game is what they averaged in non-garbage time in their three losses.
Yeah.
That just doesn't get it done. And the reality is Drew Aller and his completion percentage, and I always get hyper focused on this because I truly believe it as a fundamental concept that quarterbacks take way too much blame in terms of how things play out, right? That position specifically is reliant on everything around them to click and be executing its job at the exact same time, right? Your offensive line, your running backs picking up blitzes, your receivers catching passes. But the thing that stands out to me specifically about Ohio State and Michigan is it didn't feel like that. It didn't feel like those breakdowns elsewhere were more of an inhibitor to his success than he was. Right. It was, it was his own performance against admittedly acknowledged fantastic defenses, good defenses, but it's just, this is the time where I think if everybody's being honest with themselves, you're like, hey, you got 9 months, to take all of that data, all of those experiences and translate them and propel you into the guy that everyone thinks or thought you could be, right? Again, thought you could be doesn't mean, oh, you're nothing, you stink. No, it's not that. It's, can you reach these heights that really haven't been at the position, right, in a while, honestly, right? I mean, Trace McSorley, Christian Hackenberg, obviously Sean Clifford, like those were guys who did many things and did many things well. And Trace obviously had a bunch of success. So did Sean, but is there another level? Is there a next step? And I think that everyone who watches Penn State football would say, yeah, there is another guy out there who can do things that are special, that are over the top, in terms of passing. And you just haven't seen that quite yet with Drew Aller. And now's the time for him to to take those strides if he's going to take those strides.
So because we have dueling top fives here, I'm going to go with Fitz, and we're going to give his number four because it's different, and then we'll continue the conversation. So he's got the offensive line at number four, but of course that means in the reality world, his quarterback conversation is coming in at number three. So Fitz, let's just continue the conversation. Then we'll get to the offensive line because you guys have that this order flipped. I guess what's your view on Drew Aller potential and Drew Aller what we've seen so far?
Yeah, I mean, 10 out of 10, no notes on what Nate had to say. Like, it's all there. Like, yeah, you did great, buddy.
Oh, stop.
You're fantastic. And did it with a smile, too. No, I mean, it's the same kind of argument we were having at the end of the year. Like, when does the potential get tapped and how does it come out? And, I mean, I think it's there. I don't want to say we have the sample size to say that he can do it on a consistent basis, but, like, he can make the plays.
Yeah.
It's just about filling in the gaps there. And I think that's what the mental side of things is going to, that's going to be the difference right there. I have him at three, so it's not like I have him far off and I've flip-flopped the offensive line. I'm sure Nate has the offensive line at three. So it's not, I think they're comparable in terms of, hey, these are challenges that they're going to have to overcome. Yes, they have the potential to do so, and they have the room. I think that's why I have them ranked higher, is the room from top to bottom. I think it's pretty good. Like, I think it's, in terms of the health that we've seen of this room from three years, 2021. I mean, this room kind of just, you know, does whatever it does all over that. So I think it is strong. And because of that, they have options. They're going to want to get Bo Probula into the game.
Let me ask you about that, because James Franklin talked this time and during the summer last year is crafting an offense that both players could use. And that's not to say it's a two quarterback system. That was not the case last year. Then there was the drumbeat of, we want to get Bo involved. It didn't present itself outside of garbage time last year, just to nutshell everything that happened last year. And then Bo Probula more involved once the decision-making process stopped with Mike Yurcich and it went to Jaywan Sider and Ty Howell. So crafting an offense that isn't hyper-specific just for Drew Aller, do you think that's wise, you know, to get the most out of him, to give him the most opportunity for success? Is it like, is this offense half pregnant when you're doing something like that?
Yes. Also, the argument in the chat that says we need more bunch routes, and then the response is we had too many bunch sets. Like, that's kind of where we're at right here. I just think, you know, you simplify it not for the one guy, like, but you simplify it for, and I think that's what Andy Kolonecki, when you take a look at his reputation, you take a look at what he does. Yes, there's a lot going on in terms of motion, in terms of formations and different things like that. But, like, I don't want to call it complicated. Like, if that, T. Frank, does that make sense to you? Like, they do a lot of things, but they also don't do an overly amount of
in Kolonecki's offense.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the idea is to do, you could think of it as a lot of sets, but fewer plays. So kind of a core offense that you throw a bunch of, I don't want to say garbage, but, you know, the subterfuge.
Yeah.
Sleight of hand. It's the vanilla ice cream and then the toppings in his blizzard conversation. And the toppings is formations, shifts, motions, orbit motions, all that stuff. But the plays are similar and repeatable from different positions.
Right. So that is how you, for lack of a better, oversimplified is an oversimplified term. Like, here, like, you got to make it so his reads are, you know, it's college football. You're not going to make three reads. And he's done an okay job of that at times. But, like, when he gets into it, when he gets I don't want to say gets behind, but when you get a little bit under it and you see the pressure that, you know, that they've had, that is when he sort of, you know, I don't want to say loses it at times. So, and I don't know if it's a fix. Like, fix is probably the wrong word here, but, like, you've got a lot of work to do putting in a new offense and also getting him on the same page and also committing to him. Like they're not going to change the starter. Like, that's right. Kind of what we're all, like, agreeing without saying, is they're not going to change to Bo Probula unless there's an injury or something like that. And, you know, I think you can make the argument that it's going to come together, and it's potential, like, the potential is there. We said the same thing with wide receivers. The potential is there for it to come together.
One of the things I've noticed, I think, and people have asked the differences between Andy Kotelnicki and Mike Yurcich, and some of the things that I think I identified this offseason doing the film studies is Mike Yurcich's drop back passing game, pure progression game, was really the core of the offense. And a lot of his options were for screen passes. The RPOs were mostly screens, and I'm overgeneralizing here. But in Kotelnicki's offense, the first reads might be a little bit easier. He might have more RPOs, more throws to get the quarterback in rhythm, as James Franklin talked about. So there might be more production from non-drop back. You have to read the defense, like Fitz said, like going 1-2-3 through the progression to find the open receiver based on the coverages and the shifts and things like that. So there might be more, okay, if the safety moves, I throw the football. If he doesn't, I give the ball. And that is a cleaner, you know, he talked about same teaching in a lot of these online tutorials you might see floating around, of trying to simplify the game from that, where you don't have to read two or three keys. You're reading one thing and you're making one decision. We'll come back to this in a little bit, because there's another question about the offense and some of the things with the explosiveness of the offense. So let's get on to the offensive line conversation and why you have this flip. So I'll throw this up here again. So, Nate, you have the offensive line at 3. Bits, you have the offensive line at 4. So, let's begin the debate that will be amicable, I imagine. Nate, why do you have the offensive line higher?
How dare you, Fitz? I'm appalled. I think that there's, and this is probably partially me projecting a little bit here, but you're making assumptions of progress based on like reputation. For me, that's mm-hmm. how I'm looking at this. I think Caden Wallace is a bigger loss than people realize. I mean, maybe people do realize, but it's the difference between Olu was like, yeah, he's gone. You know that he's gone. He's not coming back to Penn State. Caden, I think that at least in my mind, it was kind of a maybe there's a chance he comes back. And he didn't, right? Sal Wormley is a huge win, I think, in terms of providing that veteran presence. Nick Dawkins, I think, is underrated, is an under-talked about aspect of this in terms of that position and what his performance, if he can rise to that level, what it could mean for them. But then you look around and it's like, okay, JB Nelson, Drew Shelton, Vega, Donka, like Javen, are they that good? Right? Like there's little, we've had little snacks, right? Of, mm-hmm. okay. Hey, there's, wow. Okay. Drew and what he did. And I'm certainly speaking for myself, my perception of Drew Shelton is based on coming in at the end of his freshman year and right. not getting waxed, right?
Yeah.
Not getting his clock cleaned. And some of that was being able to hide some of his deficiencies. He came into Penn State with a reputation and to the positive side of like, hey, this is a guy who takes this very seriously. He will not be denied. I think that you're seeing some of that from Donka now in terms of his vibe. But where's Javen, right? Like where is he in his path and his trajectory? Can he compete? Nolan Rucci, right? Like same deal. I should have included him when I talked about that group in the first place is, mm-hmm. People hate the basketball crossover, but I'm going to make it here anyway. When you start collecting pieces from the transfer portal because it didn't work out at the last place, even though there were lofty expectations to begin their careers, right? This is a highly ranked recruited guy. Well, what is it? Right? Like what created that chasm between actual production and expectation, and is the fresh start somewhere else? Does that give you the opportunity to unlock your true potential? And certainly I think that there's a buzz for Rucci this offseason. But it's to me, Phil Troutwine has a lot of pieces that if you're cooking, they're fresh ingredients. You like them. You like what you were looking at. It's just a matter of, can he concoct and figure out how to put all of them together and get like maximize what you have, maximize the potential there.
Can I augment your analogy there and say, the ingredients too green? Have they fully ripened yet? And can you ensure that when the meal comes together, that all of the pieces are at the stage in their development they need to be? Fitz, I imagine that's part of the, is it just the unknown, or is it that part that has them lower on your list?
Well, when you lose your best player, that hurts. And to me, hey, guards are great. You need guards, but your three most important spots, left tackle, center, right tackle, you're replacing them all. Like, let's not come out and act like this is a reloading situation here. Like, they've got talent. They've got talent to work in there, but like, it's going to take some time, and it's going to take some time for those guys to get used to actual playing football reps. Drew Shelton is a guy that we thought would eventually step in fairly seamlessly. What we've seen in the field has not added up to that. And that's a concern there at left tackle. Javen, I mean, I don't think the expectation of playing as a freshman, I mean, that was kind of, if you saw Javen, if you saw him pass block, you know, like, you knew that he was not going to be a guy that factored in last year.
And if you did, let me know, because I saw it maybe twice.
it's not a situation. I mean, this is a situation where this offseason is very important for him, which means he's probably not quite there yet to go there. It's very much we'll see with Rucci, and then Dunk on the other side. Good for a freshman to good. There's a difference there. And I'm excited. I think he can be good. Like, that's the thing. I think he can be very good. Is he good right off the jump? That's tough. That's so tough to have to figure out. So I just think there's plenty of question marks there. You've got Nick Dawkins in the middle, tremendous leader. Somebody wanted to say that, you know, he hopes he scrugs. I hope everybody scrugs, man. Like, that is one of the classically underappreciated guys over the program in the last decade. He was freaking fantastic. And, you know, I hope Nick Dawkins is Norzad. Like, that's kind of where you got to go with that, because Juice was so good. So I don't know if he's going to be that guy. He's got Cooper Cousins there to compete with. He's got a couple of other young guys there. Venga is going to be very important in here. You've got depth and experience on the interior. You've got JB Nelson, who can be a swing guy. So the pieces, I think, are there. And I think they're talented. I think they've got some talent to work with, but it takes a little bit more as a unit to functionally put that together. That's why I ranked him behind quarterback, is because, you know, the one guy at quarterback can make that, he can elevate that whole thing.
Yep.
Whereas you've got to be a complete unit. And I think Phil Troutwine is a good coach. I think that they've got a lot to work with. And I also think, and I'm going to keep going back to this, we don't know what we're looking at when it goes to offensive line. So an average offensive line is a good offensive line. So I think if they can be average, that can go a long way. And then this group has potential, maybe not to rise to like one or two in this group, but in this power rankings that we're doing. Yeah. But they've certainly got potential. I don't think they're setting themselves up to be a liability. Like, we've seen bad offensive lines at Penn State. I don't think they're in that realm.
You know there is the talent there. You understanding that there could be things that don't work out and there are problem spots, but they have the talent and the depth that they have a couple of different options. Maybe not all great options right now, but they do have the talent that eventually some of these things should work out. Fitz, you beat me to the question. Are they the group that of these bottom three? Because I think the top two are pretty locked in and obvious, and we'll get to those in a second. But of the bottom three, which one is the most likely to elevate, to challenge the top two, or move a spot from 5, 4, or 3?
Oh, you're not going to like it, but I'm going to go quarterback. Like, I think that, I mean, if you think about it, okay, you can, new coordinator, you can talk yourself into, by the end of the season, quarterback could be one. Yeah. Is it going to happen? Probably not. But like, you can talk yourself into that with the potential that you've seen. Now, the thing that you're going to have to keep going back to is the receivers control so much of that. Like, we've seen situations where there have been good throws and there have not been catches. We've seen, you know, quite the opposite as well. But the receiver to quarterback connection needs to be better. It needs to be more productive, and those guys need to step up to help everybody else out. And, you know, it's like, you know, if you used to watch Coach, the newer episodes of Coach when he was with the Orlando Breakers. I'm sure you guys remember this very well. They were going into a draft. They had the number one pick. They had nobody. You never watch Coach?
No.
Come on.
Sorry.
All right.
Well, I don't consume.
You've never
a lot
watched
of
Guts either,
TV. Have you, T. Frank?
No.
Yeah.
No. Oh,
gosh. What? I mean, never mind. I'm not going to say that. but you know, they're looking for a number one draft pick, and you're talking about taking the quarterback. It was actually the Keyshawn Johnson year, and he was like, "I'm not going to play for you guys." But okay, get the quarterback to throw the ball to the receiver. Well, we don't have the receiver. Okay, get the running back to run through or get the offensive tackle to open up the holes. We don't have a running back to run through the hole. You know, it's not that bad, but like everybody plays off of everybody here. And yeah. This is what I'm trying to talk about is like the receivers being what they were last year had a negative influence on the running game. It had a negative influence on the tight ends. It had a negative influence, obviously, on the quarterback. So like you can't let one of these things go and hope that another one picks it up, especially with the most important position on the field.
Came out in 1989. I came out in 1990. So sorry.
Good show, man. Like it had a great run. I mean,
no, I've definitely heard of it. So that's obviously
that's
is on
great.
Me.
You should watch it.
Nate, your thoughts on the same question? Which one of these positions in your mind has the most upward mobility?
Quarterback. I agree.
Okay.
And to be honest with you, I think that the running backs can help him more this year.
Like I think you mean in terms of just generally the production and explosive plays and taking less third and longs. Like let's just simplify. You think that they can give them less third and longs?
No, I think that they can be more involved in the passing game and create bigger plays. Okay. More consistently. And I think you saw that with Nick at the end of the year a little bit. And I think that they are, and when I say I think, I'm kidding. I know they're leaning into that. Like they, those guys talked about it at that freshman second year availability that we had. Like, no, they're trying to get the running backs to understand the weapons that they can be collectively in the passing game. Mm. And I think if Penn State can execute that, right. Singleton's jump from, first of all, I'm very high on Nick Singleton.
What?
Second of all, his jump in the passing game from year one to year two was notable. Like I thought it was big and can be bigger. So
yeah,
that's where I'm
at. Let's rip that Band-Aid off. Let's get to number two.
Number two.
And it is not running back. It is tight end. So Tyler Warren coming back, a depth of talent behind him. So Fitz, how do you see this working out behind Tyler Warren? Or what makes you think that these young guys, if we're taking him for granted, that these young guys can elevate to a place that keeps them essentially where they were in the breakdown, or at least pretty much where they were last year in terms of power ranking the position groups?
I'm going to break this one down so Nate can understand it. The tight ends here, they're your crock pot. And you've got different ingredients, but you throw it all in there, you let it cook, and by the end of the day, it's going to be good. Like, it's probably going to be good. Your chili is fantastic, by the way. It's going to change, obviously, with Theo out of there. It changes your dynamic in terms of what, the weapons that you have going down over the middle, as we wanted to, you know, I'll say it. We wanted to see more from Theo. We wanted to see more usage of Theo. Like, yeah. I don't think all of it was on him that the lack of quote unquote lack of production was on him, but that's neither here nor there. Doesn't matter. Shouldn't be talking about this in February in 2024. Tyler Warren has talent. Khalil Dinkins has talent. Andrew Rapelier has a ton of talent and he can block. So does this room drop off all that much? I'm not sure that it does. And on top of that, we're going to see what Andy Kotelnicki has involved for them. I know he's an O-line tight end guy. So like he can see what he's got in front of him. And Tyler Warren came back for a reason. It's to be utilized. And I think he's going to be utilized as such.
Nate, I think it's pretty cut and dried here. Pretty quick in these top two. What do you got for tight end?
Yeah, I think that this is actually like from a broader perspective, I think that this is a reputational ranking for both Fitz and I. At least I am giving them the benefit of the doubt that they're just going to continue to be good.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I think that there were areas that you highlighted last year, T-Frank, where they weren't as good as their reputation was that need to be better this year. And so that's going to be a fascinating dynamic to find out if those guys can do what Penn State needs them to do. Because here's the deal, and you know this, Franklin's not abandoning that role of a tight end. He's not turning his tight ends into Mike Kosicki's. Like, he's not. He's not.
I mean, there's a reason it's Andy Koldenicki. You know, there's many reasons, but one of the reasons is he was successful using two tight ends at Kansas to generate explosive plays in the passing game and in the running game. So there's when we talk about James Franklin saying keeping things in the offense, it's not that he's keeping plays and it's like, well, Mike did this, so we're going to do this. It's their common core themes here between the two offenses that are similar, and therefore they're keeping those concepts because they worked and they have the talent to make them work.
Yeah. Khalil Dinkins is the example to me of like a, like, I don't know, right? But I know he got to Penn State as a receiver. He was a receiver and became a tight end and had to go through some of those growing pains. And right now, I don't have any idea where he is on that scale, on that spectrum of being the complete tight end, right? Can he run block? Can he pass block? Can he do those different things that they need out of that position beyond just catching the football? So I'm intrigued as much as anybody to see how those guys live up to what they're already being given the benefit of the doubt for.
Let's get to number one. Not a surprise, but it is coming at number one. And I would say maybe there's a certain percentage of disappointment that running back is number one because of the general lack of production last year that we have talked about quite a bit here on the show, BlueWhiteIllustrated.com. Some of the things in the film room, I think it's fair to say that there are certain aspects that are on the running backs. There are certain aspects that were on the situation. So Fitz, running back number one, what are you expecting from spring in terms of not just them being the best on the offense, but them being difference makers?
Well, the spring, I would hope that they, you know, take a step back and let those younger guys get in there, because they've, I mean, 2 years of full experience was what we've seen from these two running backs that are, you know, now the veterans. We were just talking about them as kids a couple of weeks ago, it feels like, but you know, it, you know, take a step back in the spring. Now going back into what they can bring to the offense, I think we got a pretty good idea, and I'm excited to see maybe the flexibility that Andy Koldenicki has shown with backs, like getting both of those guys in the game at the same time. I think going back to our last conversation about tight end, I think 12 personnel, the percentage of 12 personnel snaps goes down, but it doesn't necessarily mean, you know, you're going three wide all the time, but you can work a couple backs in there. And we say it, you know, I don't say we say it every year. We get asked it every year, how much of this is going to work with two backs, because you think you have two backs that can complement each other pretty well and also be productive. But I think that this is probably finally the year that you can actually look at some actual evidence of what he's called in the past and say that, yeah, I think they're going to use a couple of backs at a time. So I think that's the exciting part. It's also a reputation play. Like, we saw these guys as freshmen. They didn't make that leap as sophomores. I thought there was some good things that they showed, especially at the end of the season. And that's kind of where you're hanging your hat on this one. But I feel pretty confident these guys are talented. Like, I feel pretty confident these guys can be good. We're going to see what the offensive line provides for them. We're going to see what the passing game provides for them. But I think, you know, in terms of sheer talent, you look at these guys and they're still the players that we thought they were.
Nate, close us out. About 3 minutes here left on the clock. Running backs, number one, your thoughts on this group taking a step forward in 2024.
Only 3 minutes to talk about.
I think that
well, I wanted to give him that timeline, because we still got like two or three mailbag questions.
Fitz is underselling the progress that they made last year. Everybody is. When James Franklin, because he was asked at the end of the year in November, and he made this long speech really about the ways that Nick Singleton and I think Catron, I think both of those guys were who he was talking about, were improved over the running backs that they were as true freshmen. And it's like, it's just this difference between what's sexy and right in front of your face, and you saw it as true freshmen that they made these plays, and right, great, that's spectacular. A dose of that was desperately needed last year that Penn State didn't get, admitted. But the areas that they matured and became better overall players that are take a more discerning eye that I don't even have. I can acknowledge that. But
also,
Nate, they were there.
You actually can't necessarily see those things because where they got better, you need to be watching from the end zone to see like how everything breaks down. When we have the narrative about these guys aren't whatever, you're looking at it from a two-dimensional picture and you don't see gaps opening and closing, where they're supposed to go, all those things. So I think you make an absolutely great point that the subtle improvements were hard to see if you don't like you don't have the trained eye to see those things.
The problem there is the progress didn't align with the production, and that's what you're taking home if you're a fan, is you're watching, you know, the guy runs that, you know, those runs where guys get tackled and then they slam their arm into the turf because they're mad that they, you know, just missed by that much. And that much means the difference between breaking a run sometimes. So
yep.
I think that's the thing that people are taking away, is the production just wasn't there. But I agree with you. There was progress to be found.
My argument is that some of their 4-yard runs were excellent.
Mm-hmm.
Like that to me, that is the missing ingredient here. And so if you can, as a program, get Drew and get the receivers and get the offensive line to take their strides, it opens the doors for these guys who by the end of the season, I don't think that there's any argument that they weren't making big plays. They were
right.
Singleton made them against Michigan State. He made them in the bowl game.
Yeah.
If you can unlock those doors, and like to me, the underlying, the foundational sentiment that I carries my perception on this is that they're dogs. Like they work like crazy. Those dudes are like lunatics in how they work. They are absolutely committed to the game. They do all those things right. It's why I honestly have more optimism for Drew Aller than otherwise, is that if you're committed, if you put in that work, if you do those things, there is a payoff at some point. It might not come when you expect it, but it will come eventually. And those guys who live the game and who breathe it and do all that extra work, do all the extra stuff that are committed to it, it's usually going to happen. And I think in a lot of cases, it's going to happen this year.
I have some thoughts on this, but it's going to actually dovetail perfectly into the BWI mailbag. Just a quick mailbag today. We're starting with Lamb Goal. He had this a little bit of a longer question packed with detail, but I'm going to nutshell it. At Kansas, explosive offense, number 3 in the nation in passing explosive plays over the last 2 seasons. I've talked about how they create some of that stuff. He says, however, wouldn't you agree that with the current personnel, Penn State should expect more explosive plays from the running backs than the wide receivers? Colton Nickey seems to be a mastermind of heavy personnel, pre-snap formations, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. This is where I think, to Nate's point, the ecosystem for Nick Singleton to break big plays was not there last year, because I want to push back one thing you said, Nate. The offensive line did their job more times than they had in the past. They had some perfectly blocked run plays, but Nick needed to break a tackle. The problem was, in the situation last year, the safeties were so aggressive against Penn State. The free defender, instead of being 10 yards down the field meeting you at 6 or 7, was meeting them at the line of scrimmage. Colton Nickey's offense from these particular situations of either manipulating the defense to break some of their rules and get guys out of position through gap exchange, you know, improper gap exchange, or just creating a situation where the offense is more explosive in the passing game, gives Singleton more free running lanes where he is best in a, you know, train tracks, explosive down the field, outrun a guy for a big play, as opposed to having to run him over that safety. Maybe you get 8 yards instead of 37, which is really the biggest difference between 22 and 23. So I think from Lamgul's that question, I do think that that's a thing. The one caveat I'll have, and I want to turn it over to you, Fitz, is that a lot of what we saw last year, especially with the 2-back sets, was so steeped in triple option that I don't want to say that's coming to Penn State, because how are you running that with Drew Aller, who has to be a legitimate run threat? If you're going to have a triple option of a speed back to the outside, a dive, and then the quarterback has to keep the ball. If he's unwilling to keep the ball, then the other option doesn't matter. So that's the one area that I would say, I don't know as far as those particular explosive plays.
Yeah. How much is your quarterback opening up for your running back? So I agree with 100%. The other thing here is explosive plays. Does that mean throwing the ball down the field and catching it? Does that mean turning short gains into explosive plays for the wide receivers? That's the question that I have.
Yeah,
because we haven't seen it from those guys. Like, that is a situation. Yeah, Keandre's had some very nice catches over the middle that he has sprung for touchdowns, for big gains and things like that. But the overall lack of yak, if you will, on this team is a bit concerning. So yeah. I'm anxious to see if they can change that.
Nate, do you have a response to all that you want to throw out there for the running backs?
No.
Okay.
You want to say lack of yak, because it's very fun.
That was fun to hear. Can you say it one more time?
Lack of yak. It's great.
Love it. All right. Fitz, this question for you. This is talking about the recent change for the early signing period moving into December. Doug 2, 1988 says, I know you guys talked about rule changes you like to see, but I don't remember. What were your thoughts on the early signing period moving up? Seems like it would be a benefit. Fitz, what do you think about the change in the early signing period? Something that I believe we'll get into more with Ryan on Thursday, but I want to get your thoughts here.
Take the calendar, blow it up. That's great. So yes, I think the proposal right now, and the SEC is kind of pushing this one, is to move it to the Wednesday after the season is over of championships week. I think that's great. I think that given what's there right now, is these coaches go out on the road in December. You know, they just got done coaching the entire season. Nobody feels bad for the coach. I'm not trying to embrace sympathy here for the coaches. That's a lot, man. Like that's a lot on your plate, and it doesn't really move the needle as much as it probably used to do when you're doing these in-home visits and things like that. So I have no problem with them moving it to December. To be honest with you, from a Penn State perspective, the more that you can move things up, the better, because of the way the Penn State recruits. We're talking about July. Like, we're talking about a potential signing day at the end of the summer. And that's great, because you think about the kids that Penn State recruits, the guys that they get on board early, who want to get this over before their senior seasons. What was it last year? It was just Jalen Harvey, basically, at that point. It was still uncommitted. This would be fantastic for Penn State to move that to July. And of course, there's going to be language where if a coach leaves, you can get out of it and things of that nature. And to be honest with you, there's not much that changes. Like, guys can sign in December and leave in January. There's nothing stopping them here. So it's like, this is kind of all for naught, if you will. But from a traditional signing perspective, yes, I think that the further you can move it up really helps Penn State. Doesn't help everybody, because not everybody recruits that way. And, you know, it's going to change the way that people can, approach the calendar, especially down south, is, these guys want to take official visits during the season, whereas you're going to push that further into the summer. So, yeah, take the calendar, blow it up, make it earlier, and it helps Penn State.
And I think that another added benefit, we saw Penn State do a lot of work in the transfer portal window in the late part this year, because they were focusing on getting their class all together. Not to say that they weren't trying to do it during that window as well, but it separates them so that you're not doing two things at once as much. So I think that's another part of that, but also the college football playoff going on during that period. So things had to change anyway. Just fascinating mess. And Nate, I want to bring you a much simpler question. Poncho 570 says, name a player on offense and defense you think is going to be a surprise this spring season. Do you have a guy? I'll just give you the or, offense or defense. Do you have a guy in mind that you're interested to learn more about that you think has the potential to do what Poncho asks here?
I like Jameel Lyons. Honestly, I do. He immediately comes to mind. Honestly, anybody at receiver, right? Trey Wallace. Okay. Trey Wallace is healthy and stays healthy. Then yeah, he'll surprise everyone.
We need we need a bell or something whenever somebody mentions receiver, cause we can't drink. So we need something there.
So no, I think that there's Donka is an option there. I'm not sure that offensive linemen really register as surprises in people's minds, because it's harder to discern that. It's harder to see that. But we'll look, it is hope springs eternal in the spring. So there will be many players, I am certain, who are, how would I put this? Like totally transformed, right? That's going to be, there will be totally
best shape of his life. Totally just, different person.
Totally different person over 4 months. And
we don't do that one anymore. Anyway,
we don't do what's that?
The best shape of their life. It goes without saying, they better be in the best shape of their life. This is college football. It's really hard. Anthony Duanca, I'm very excited to see that battle at right tackle, Duanca and Rucci. I think Andrew Rapelier has the potential to sort of weasel himself in there because he can block. He brings an element of toughness to that position that they needed. Beyond that, I would love to see a receiver. I don't know that I'm going to single one out right now, but love to see a receiver. Defensively, Zaki Wheatley, I think, is going to be a key part of this defense. Penn State's going to run a lot of three safety looks, and he has done some really good, nice things this offseason. They're excited to see him. And then those two new corners, Kimber and AJ Harris, what do they bring to the table? Very excited to see that. I mean, hey, that level of defense is up here. And, you know, the expectations are what they are. We kind of take that defense for granted at this point, but there's some holes to fill and some really good players to fill it. The offense is the same thing that we've talked about all offseason.
Yeah, I think that's a great place to leave it. So those are your BWI mailbag questions. Thanks to everybody who's a part of the show today. Thank you to Sean Fitz and Nate Bauer for giving us excellent insight and their power rankings. Make sure you subscribe. Tomorrow we are talking about the NFL Combine, and we're going to be previewing the players there, what they need to prove, not a whole lot for some of them, and of course, more on the BWI live show. I'm Thomas Frank Carr. We'll talk to you then.